Leon Goldenberg with another edition of Politics New York. Sitting with me here today is my co-host on many of these shows and someone I spend a lot of time with, maybe too much time with. My wife thinks I spend more time with him than I do with her. She might be right. And that is none other than Haskell Bennett. Welcome to the show, Haskell.
Leon, always a pleasure to be with you and certainly on this new variation, Politics New York.
So we're going to be talking about the races that are coming up and the importance of getting out the vote, the critical importance of getting out the vote. Early voting started 6/12, or as we like to say, 6/13, because on 6/12 was Shabbos and nobody could vote on Shabbos. So early voting in the Orthodox community started on 6/13. It is critical. It is so easy with early voting. Oh, I forgot. I had a wedding tonight. So go tomorrow night. Go during the day. There are so many hours that you can vote that there is absolutely no excuse. I'm going away. I forgot. Do a mail-in. There are so many ways to vote.
First of all, early voting, Leon, is now available in every single election district. If you don't know where to do early voting, it may not be in your regular polling site. So I will share with you a very easy website. Findmypollsite.vote.nyc. Find my poll site, findmypollsite.vote.nyc. That will give you your location to do early voting. Anytime between 6/13, June 13th, which is a Sunday, until the 20th of June. And then, of course, the primary is on the 22nd. Leon, this year's Democratic primary might be, we've been doing this a long time together, it might very well be the most important primary of our lives here in New York City. I hate to be melodramatic, but I don't think I'm exaggerating.
I don't think you are exaggerating. The city is just coming out of COVID. The city is coming to a very critical time. Does the next mayor take the city in the right direction, or does the next mayor take the city back to the 1970s? And it is very easy to go back to the 1970s. Some of the people that are running will get it back to the 70s before you can say 70s. Their policies will absolutely destroy the quality of life that we have grown used to.
We're already seeing it.
We're already seeing it. Look at the murder rate. Look at the shooting rates. It is up the wazoo. 60% ahead of last year. 60% ahead. 70% ahead of 2019. They're crazy numbers.
You know, Leon, I have my own little statistics, my own barometer. I think you would agree that this is the right statistic. For those of us older, you know, maybe remembering the bad old days of New York City, there are three things that I notice now that I haven't seen, we haven't seen in about 25 years. And that is A, we see panhandlers. B, tons of graffiti everywhere.
All of them.
And three, empty store windows, storefronts. Those three things, amongst the other things you're talking about, the shootings, the crimes, the activity, the negativity, but those three barometers, as a New Yorker, the graffiti, the dirty streets for sure is an indicator, but the panhandling, simply it has become a situation where if somebody's not going to get a hold of it, It appears that we could lose control of what was incredible gains. We became the apple of the country. Everyone was looking at the great renaissance of New York, the Giuliani years to clean it up, the Bloomberg years. And unfortunately, COVID didn't help. And a lot of different political winds going in the wrong direction. Again, for the listeners here, this election, the Democratic primary, will in fact give us the elected officials for the foreseeable future, at least the next 4 years in most cases, and probably 8 years. So you need to vote. You need to make sure your voice is heard. You need to be involved. This is an all-hands-on-deck alert. You will see ads in newspapers, and you'll see emails and text messages and WhatsApps. But the sound of our voices, it couldn't be more crucial. These races, starting with the mayor's race, which we'll talk about now, the controller's race, other races locally in every neighborhood for city council, these races are crucial, and your voice is needed now more than ever. Do not underestimate the power of your voice. We need your voices heard this year.
So let me take you back a little bit. The year is 1992. 2,251 people are murdered in New York City. It's the last year of the Dinkins administration, and everybody likes to run on Dinkins, that the city was like it was, and that Giuliani came in and cleaned it up. But I want to give you a few facts. David Dinkins went up to Albany, pled with the legislature, allow me to pass a tax, an MTA tax, that will allow me to hire 5,000 policemen. He started safe streets, and that's when it started to come down the numbers. He put people into the academy, at the police academy. I think there was 1,500 in the class, but they started to come out once Giuliani was elected. He put them on the street. He did the right job with them, and he brought murder down as well as all crimes down. And we were down in 2019 to below 300 murders in New York City. It was the safest large city in the country by far. Second tier cities like Baltimore had way more murders than New York City, and they're not even as big as a borough in New York City. But now we're above 400 again. So these are important issues. There are 8 major candidates running for this election. There are some very good candidates, and the FJC has endorsed 3 candidates, all good candidates. And we're going to talk about all 3 of them. And the first one, of course, number one is Eric Adams.
We endorsed Eric Adams for our number one choice. And in conversation and consultation with our Rabbanim, community leaders, yeshiva leaders, store owners, residents, neighbors, basically everyone, there are 2 criteria that we made our choices on for all the races. And the first criteria, something that everyone in the city can agree upon, is that if there's not going to be a safe city, if we're not going to have safety and security, all the other things really just don't matter. It's impossible to live in a city that you can't work in, you can't walk in, you can't live in, you can't send your children out, you can't fear for your life. There's no way to live a quality of life. And for our community, it seemed to us that the pro-cop, the pro-police, and the pro-anti-crime candidate has to rule the day. And as far as we're concerned, Eric Adams was and is that candidate, former police captain, retired as a police captain, a police officer, 22 years, person who served as a state senator, understands the legislature, person as borough president for 7 years. He has a resume, he has an experience, and this is a big deal. He is against taking away any funding for the police department. As far as I'm concerned, any candidate who is in favor of defunding the police department, it is a disqualification. This city cannot go back to the way it was. And the only way that this city will get back to its greatness is if the city is the city police department is allowed to do its job. I don't want to get
doesn't mean right. No. I don't want to doesn't get, mean that there can't be improvements in the police department. That doesn't mean when somebody calls up that there's somebody that has mental issues, mental illnesses, and is raging on, that maybe a cop should go along with a social worker. Doesn't mean you can't improve the police department. Everybody can improve. The only one that I know, and everybody will admit that is perfect, is myself. Other than that, everybody can improve. So there can be improvements. But defunding it is not the answer.
For sure. There's no question. And secondarily, as far as the Orthodox Jewish community is concerned, religious freedom coming out of the pandemic, red zone, the inability to go to shul, the willingness to close our yeshivas, forcing us to do to curtail our religious way of life, is certainly high on the priority list of our religious community. And so, again, in that realm, Eric understands our community. He's represented our community. He has a relationship with Crown Heights, who endorsed him, who stood up for him. And Crown Heights really is a leader in this ability to understand how to navigate an Orthodox Jewish community in the middle of an urban community, surrounded by not necessarily other from communities. And they've done it well, sometimes under stress and under duress. And Eric Adams is one of those elected officials who has done a very good job of reaching out to the Crown Heights community in particular, and the Far Rockaway community as well. Again, similar dynamic, a community out in an area not surrounded by necessarily other religious communities, such as Borough Park and Flatbush next to each other.
But more so, also small business, he understands, which is really a backbone of our community. You take a look at all the stores that are owned by our community in every single neighborhood. Look at all the businesses that are suffering tremendously, and someone who cares to get them back on their feet.
Safety, religious freedom, quality of life, helping the small businesses, which is the engine of our local economy for our community. These are issues that are important to us. Andrew Yang has done a very good job reaching out to the community. We chose him as our number two choice. He has reached out to the community, has said all the right things on religious freedom. He certainly has a positive energy about him. He certainly was worthy and is worthy of consideration. We chose him as a number two. He's a newer candidate.
We think very highly of him.
We do think highly of him. And then rounding out the three choices that we have made in our community here in Flatbush has been Catherine Garcia, former sanitation commissioner, who reached out to the community. She has extensive government experience. She is a pragmatic person. We had an excellent meeting with her. She gets it. She understands what it means to run the city. And that is an important point, and one of the reasons why we actually endorsed Eric Adams over Andrew Yang. Eric Adams has experience in government. It will be very difficult, especially with a very far left progressive city council that is that people are predicting to come in. You're going to need an elected official in Gracie Mansion in City Hall who will be able to step forward, challenge a progressive city council for the betterment of the city, take the policies that work and collaborate, and resist the policies that we all know have been detrimental over the last several years, certainly on criminal activity. Legalizing is the only candidate, Eric Adams, to refuse and reject legalizing certain drugs. Again, all of these are quality of life and pro-police, anti-crime initiatives, which we feel at this point in time was worthy of our support.
We're going to move on to the next race, the controller's race.
Leon, tell us what the controller does.
What does the controller do? Well, the first thing, and the biggest job that he has, he's in charge of the New York City pension, which now totals $250 billion. $250 billion in assets. So he's got to watch that. He's got to make sure it grows, because the way the pension system is in New York, it's, I forget what the exact word is, but basically it's guaranteed. The pension is guaranteed. So if the pension fund doesn't make its money, guess who's paying the difference?
Taxpayers again.
And the taxpayers are paying multi-millions of dollars because of the shortfall. But the more it grows, the easier the burden is on the taxpayers. He also has to sign off on every contract that New York City signs. He has the ability to audit every single agency, and he should be auditing every single agency. And as many people look at it, it's a stepping stone to the next level, which is to be the mayor of the city of New York.
Well, at least attempting to be.
Right.
Although the last two controllers
did not make it.
So far.
And the public advocate did make it.
Interesting.
Bill de Blasio made it instead of a controller. The public advocate race in this case is basically almost a foregone conclusion with Jumaane Williams running in it. And really,
basically unopposed.
But let's go back to the controller's race. We have endorsed David Weprin, a member of our community, in this race.
Yep. Not, and we didn't endorse him because he's a member of our community. We endorsed him because we think he is actually the best candidate for this job. David has extensive legislative experience. David served as the finance council chair in the city council. He knows numbers. He has been a steward of city money before in the city council in that position, which is actually, I think, the second or third highest position in the council, at least the most respected position, past the speaker. A member of our own community, someone who has extensive government experience. He's qualified for the position. He's running as controller. He's done a good job as assembly member, and that's why he has earned our support.
Our support. But there are several other people that are running for this office that are also good people, but we chose to make only one endorsement. So not everybody do we have an issue with. There are quite a few people that are running, and if you do some research, you'll decide if you want to put in a number two and a number three. There is a number two and there is a number three that can be put in. We chose not to make that endorsement, but there are qualified people that understand our community, that understand what the job is, and are really good candidates also. But we chose
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan. So other than that, you have local races.
Sure. So for those who are living in Brooklyn, there's a race for Brooklyn Borough President. There's races for City Council in Queens. I would love to just to talk about...
Let's talk about Borough President first.
Sure.
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn Borough President.
Because Queens Borough President is pretty much a far gone conclusion.
I don't think so. There's a lot of kids. There's two good candidates there.
Yeah. So now let's talk about a few of them.
Okay.
So let's start off with Brooklyn.
Brooklyn,
we have endorsed Robert Kornacki. And not just because he's the tallest person to be running in office, but it certainly doesn't help that he's hurt him that he's 6'10" and stands out. And the only person taller than him in most of the pictures is yours truly. But you're really dealing with somebody who really is aligned with our line of thought. Again, opposes defunding the police, believes wholeheartedly that there can be improvements made to the police department, but not defunding is not the answer. Someone who cares about small communities. Somebody who actually played basketball in Israel.
Yep.
And lived there for almost 2 years. So he understands Israel. Now, Israel doesn't come into the Brooklyn. Well, it's debatable whether or how much Israel does come into the Brooklyn Borough President's office. But the reality is it's a major bully pulpit, and so therefore having a friend of Israel there is really incredible. Which, by the way, let's not forget, the other candidates for mayor that we have endorsed and controller are also very strong on Israel. And those are very, very important factors. The city does have business dealings with Israel, so that's really critical on the controller's side as well as on the mayor's side. And the bully pulpit of the mayor of the New York City is probably the second or third biggest bully pulpit in the country. After the president, I think it's the mayor of New York City. Some may say Chuck Schumer. I don't think so. And some may say Nancy Pelosi. I don't think so. So those are an important race. Robert Kornacki. We also did on number two over there, Joanne Simon.
Assemblywoman
from downtown Brooklyn.
Just for the listeners, there's ranked choice voting, which means you can get more than one choice in your ballot. There's been some education out there, but don't be surprised when people ask you for your first choice, your second choice. I believe you could have up to five choices.
Up to five.
So when you hear someone say, we ranked them one or ranked them two or three or four, that's what they're talking about. So in the Brooklyn Borough's president's race, and finally, the third one was Matthew Eugene, a council member who has served the community quite well for many, many years, and we gave him the third ranking. I just want to run over to the Queens Borough president race for a moment. The Queens Jewish Alliance in Queens has also come out with their endorsements, and I just want to be faithful to their request. They are ranking Elizabeth Crowley and Donovan Richards in a 1 and 2. Choose your candidate, the one that you feel would be would be a good candidate. Back to Flatbush for a moment in the city council. There's a race for an incumbent seat for Farrah Lewis, where we've endorsed. We've supported Farrah Lewis in the past, and we strongly urge...
Past three elections.
This will be the third election, past two elections, believe it or not. New York City voting rules the way that they are. But I do want to mention two races, because this is a citywide conversation on the Nachum Segal Network. Two races in Queens that are of very great interest to listeners. Number one, the District 24 race, which is Kew Garden Hills, my former
residence,
my childhood home and where my family still resides, my parents, sisters, and brothers. The community came out very strongly for James Gennaro, and Jim Gennaro is going to be running again against a BDS candidate. The last time, similar to the way it was a few months ago. The community showed tremendous strength and sent a message out to really the whole city that when you unite as a community and everyone steps up and votes, and that was in a blizzard, mind you, you can do some great things. So Jim Gennaro.
29th.
There's another race, an important race that I would like to mention in a short time that we have left. The 29th Council District, that encompasses a neighborhood that I am too very familiar with and grew up in, and that is the neighborhood of Kew Gardens, where my grandparents lived for 50 years, and in Forest Hills, where my other grandparents lived for about 50 years. My grandmother, God bless, still has a home on Burns and Yellowstone. So Forest Hills is still quite important to me, as is the community. A number of friends in Rego Park and Richmond Hill. There is a race in that community, a city council race of great importance to the community, and one of our own is running in that race. A friend of mine, someone who I've watched grow up, I know him since he's a young man, and that's me saying
it. At least one of you grew up.
Right? We're trying. And that's a dear friend of mine, someone who I'm very proud of. His name's Avi Sipristein. Avi Sipristein is running. It's not so easy. Everybody talks about politics and what this candidate should do and what that candidate doesn't do, but it's very rare that someone decides, you know what, I'm going to put myself
out there
on the ballot, knock on doors, fight for the community, and really have to stand up for election. So I admire the fact that Avi Sipristein did that. I admire the fact that he's out there hustling, working hard, trying to earn every single vote in that neighborhood. Avi's track record of community involvement is extremely impressive. He's the founder of Chaverim. He's a Hatzalah member. He really puts himself out for the community. He's always put himself out of the community. He comes from a family that puts itself out for the community. And I'm strongly urging all of our friends in Kew Gardens, Forest Hills, Rego Park, Richmond Hill, step up for the hometown guy. The hometown guy, Avi Sipristein, who has always stepped up for you on election day. Go out and vote for Avi Sipristein. And that's my case.
So what else other races do we have? We can come back to Brooklyn.
I really just want to talk about the value of voting,
yes,
to be
honest. Yes, let's talk about the value of voting.
I think as we started the show, I just want to reiterate, the times are very tough. People are very frightened. We just literally a couple of weeks ago were seeing open season
on Jews. Especially Orthodox Jews.
Identifiable Jews, but Jews. When those... criminals, thugs, decided to go to the Diamond District, and I said this to the mayor, I've said this to the police commissioner, I've said it to police officers and elected officials. Let's not make any mistake about it, okay? I know there's this even-handedness that goes on in politics. We have to condemn anti-Semitism and also condemn hate against everyone. I'm also against hate for everyone. But if identifiable Jews are the ones getting beaten up, I think now's the time to actually focus on what the problem is and let's not be so politically correct. So when thugs go to the Diamond District, which is a well-known spot where Orthodox Jews and Jews work and really spend their days, and they went to there in that area to go find Jews and attack them, I think we can safely say we have a problem in New York City in the year 2021. How do you change that? You make your voices heard at the polls. None of us are going to go out with a baseball bat, or we shouldn't at least, or go out with a weapon, God forbid. That's the police's job. Let the police do their job. But if you want the police to do their job, you need to empower the elected officials to let them do their job.
And if you don't go to vote and the wrong candidate comes in, I tell you now that within 3 years, you can leave New York City.
Oh, you're saying it again.
I'm saying it again. He doesn't like to hear it. I'm telling you, if the wrong candidate comes in, economically, New York is going to be a disaster. And security-wise, New York is going to be a disaster. We have candidates out there. We have candidates running for the city council that are socialists, that believe in taking away everything from anybody that makes money.
Used to be, Leon, you would call someone a socialist. It was a tremendous insult. Used to be. Calling someone a socialist? This is the United States of America. Everybody's a proud democracy. Today, it's a badge of honor. In certain circles, in certain camps, they are looking to get the endorsement of the Socialist Party, the Democratic Socialists of
These
America.
These are people who did not see the failure of China, did not see the failure of the Soviet Union, did not see the failure of Cuba, did
Venezuela.
Not see Venezuela right now. Venezuela is the richest oil-producing country in the world, and it can't get its oil out of the ground. Iran has to ship oil to Venezuela. Is that unbelievable? There's more oil under Venezuela than there is Saudi Arabia. Everybody thinks that Saudi Arabia is, and look how rich Saudi Arabia is, because Venezuela is socialist.
I want to tell you one more point of why we're endorsing and why I'm supporting Eric Adams. Last week, Maya Wiley was endorsed by AOC. It's a very big press conference.
Right.
Every news station carried it. Maya Wiley is a proponent, as I said earlier, of defunding the police. That's her position. She's entitled to that position, and I'm entitled to reject that position. AOC, she makes no bones about where she stands, what her politics are, etc. Eric Adams was the only candidate to repudiate AOC. She says, you want to defund the police? In the same weekend where children of 10 years of age are being shot and killed and murdered. So which way is it going to be? And Eric said it very well, and I really applaud him for saying it. I'm going to see if I can find the statement, but I'm going to just paraphrase it for the moment. What was his statement? His statement was, in a time where black and brown children are being shot and murdered on our street, is certainly not the moment and not the time to defund the police. He said further, in a time, I'm just paraphrasing here, where the Asian community is being attacked, and I found it, and where the Asian community is being attacked, here's his quote. Rep. Ocasio-Cortez and Maya Wiley want to slash the police department budget and shrink the police force at a time when black and brown babies are being shot in our streets. Hate crimes are terrorizing Asian and Jewish communities, and innocent New Yorkers are being stabbed and shot on their way to work. Brooklyn Borough President said they are putting slogans and politics in front of public safety, and that would endanger the lives of New Yorkers. And that is exactly why we are supporting Eric Adams. That, my friends, is because he is the public safety candidate.
But to say in the mikveh that I'm going to... that I like Eric Adams, or I like Andrew Yang, or I like Catherine Garcia, is very nice.
Yeah, but it's not enough.
It doesn't count. It only counts, not what you say in the mikveh, not what you say in the shul.
Or WhatsApp.
Or on WhatsApp, and complain and rep, and then people are going to be complaining about the article that I recently put into different publications about New York City being a democratic city, and, you know, so many endorsements I make. Everybody's going to complain. Don't complain to me if you don't go to vote. If you come to me, my first question to you will be,
did you vote?
If you didn't vote, I will walk away from you. I'm not interested in what you have to say. Because if you can't take the time for yourself, for your family, and for a community to go out and vote, you have no right to tell me what I should do. You have no right to speak to me, and I will ignore you, and I will walk away from you. I will turn away from your face and walk away from
On the that. Other hand, I'm happy to disagree with anyone, have a civil conversation. Certainly, there are certain people who feel differently than we
no
do.
No problem.
But I have to tell you, the bottom line is, no matter what your political persuasion is, I think we can all agree that the times demand that we step forward and we step up.
And that starts June 12th or June 13th with early voting till June 20th with the primary day June 22nd. Don't complain to me on June 23rd you didn't like the winner, because it's going to be too late. go out and vote. And if you're not registered as a Democrat, do so, so that at least next time your voice can count if you live in New York City. If you live in Long Island, you can be a Republican. If you live somewhere else, you can be a Republican. If you live in New York City, you better be a Democrat.
Have a great day.
So now I have with me Judge Dwayne Esther Paul, who is a judge right now in Brooklyn, New York, and is running for Kings County Surrogates Court, which is a borough-wide judgeship. So first off, welcome to the show, Judge.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
So right now you're in Supreme Court, am I correct?
Oh, I'm a Kings County Civil Court judge. I started in family court. So I was in family court as an acting Supreme Court justice for 4 years. I was elected in 2015.
So I think that's important as far as your background for surrogates court is family court, because you have a lot of the exact same issues that will eventually land up in surrogates court. Am I right about that?
That's right. So in family court, interestingly enough, we have concurrent jurisdiction, which means that we have the authority to do certain types of cases that other courts do. So in family court, we do a lot of domestic violence cases, domestic violence against elders, young people, people who have intimate relationships. And so in that case, we do criminal court cases and deal with the penal code and acts of violence. And then we also do guardianships and adoptions. And in surrogates courts, we also do guardianships and adoption. Something else that overlaps also is the assignment of counsel and monitoring counsel's work to make sure that they're working in the best interest of the family that I assign them to. Similar to surrogates court, we assign guardians, which are typically attorneys who are on a panel. And so when we assign them, the surrogate has to monitor their work and ensure that they're working in the best interest of the estate that they're assigned to.
Do you have to be an attorney to be a guardian?
You don't have to be an attorney to be a guardian. There's a Part 36 list. You become certified. There are some people who come from sometimes nonprofit agencies that deal with guardianships, particularly because in surrogates court, we deal with guardianships of mentally disabled adults.
Which that goes on a lot. In other words, you have many people that the families had money and they leave it over to take care of their children, but it's somehow not done properly. So you're going to be running. What do you see as the importance of surrogates court?
So when I think about surrogates court, I think about my own family. My family are Caribbean immigrants from Haiti. They came here very poor, humble beginnings, immigrant community, challenges with the culture and the language, sometimes feeling isolated, but they came full of hope and determination and the spirit to work hard. I think my mother is very faithful and intentional when she named me Esther. So I think about the community and their needs and how even now with the pandemic, so many people passed away so suddenly and are in desperate need of the services of surrogates court to really transition families and from one generation to the next and ensure that their wealth and their legacy transfers over to that next generation. And when we're talking about guardianships and adoptions, we're talking about our most vulnerable population and making sure that there's a surrogate that respects and understands diversity in the communities and making sure that families and culture is honored and respected on the bench.
So before we go, I want to go into COVID because COVID really impacted surrogates court tremendously. Give us a little bit of your background. You're born here in the US, in New York, I take it?
I was born here in the US, that's right. And my parents migrated from Haiti. They came to Brooklyn directly. Typically, that happens when you are really reuniting with any resource that you have here. And so Brooklyn is the place where they landed. I grew up and I went to SUNY Stony Brook. I got a dual degree in political science and social science with a minor in child and family studies. And I ended up also following through and getting a master's in public policy from Stony Brook. And then I graduated from George Washington University Law School in DC. When I finished law school, I stayed on and clerked for a judge who was the administrative judge in Maryland. And actually in circuit court, it's a little different than in New York. So in Maryland, the judges rotate every 6 months through a docket. So I worked in criminal court, family court, and civil court. And because my judge was the administrative judge, she was the judge in charge of all of the court, we rotated throughout all of the dockets continuously.
So you have a background in every area.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then I came back to New York. I worked in-house counsel doing all defense work, personal injury, property damage, labor law, construction cases, real estate. So I represented small businesses, mom and pops, to large corporations, landlords to tenants, the vast majority. But I always remembered my parents and understanding my mother's spiritual connection and the idea of service. So I didn't mention my mother was actually an orphan at the age of 8. And she was formally educated for the first time when she was 13. But she never forgot giving back, the value of giving back to the community. So she actually went back to Haiti, opened a ministry and 2 orphanages to help her children. And so I think that's part of her strong faith. She's really thoughtful about the idea of, and the story of Esther, the idea that you may be placed in a position. Sometimes it's challenging. Sometimes there are the bittersweet experiences, but they are all intended for you to learn something so you can use that to serve other people. You know, Esther was faced with a challenge where she had to really stand up for her people. And I'm hoping to put myself in a position throughout the work that I do in the community, doing community service workshops. I sat on Community Board 3. Even when I became a judge, I continued the work of putting programs and workshops together to strengthen communities and to really provide real access to justice and to the court system. And so I started something that's called the Annual Family Law Day. And with the Community Law Day, what happens is I bring out about 35 attorneys or more, and they come and give free legal information to the community on various areas of the law. And so we did trust and estate.
So you do it in different areas.
Different areas of the law, absolutely. Criminal, housing, family, and trust and estates.
That's right. So your mother is still in Haiti now?
No, unfortunately, my mother passed away. She passed
away. Right. I remember that, yes.
Yeah,
that's so the service, which people don't realize that even a judge is really about giving back to the people. And people don't realize, even people that run for the different offices, council, state assembly, it's about giving back, because almost all of you could do a lot better in private practice. There's no question in my mind. So it's not about making the big bucks working for the court system, because I don't think the big bucks are there. It's about giving back. And I think that's really incredible. COVID really, in surrogates court, it's got to be packed now because of COVID. People don't realize, nobody expected to die, but most people that died of COVID were not anticipating dying. And so therefore, and maybe first explain what it is, who comes to surrogates court, under what conditions, before you talk about COVID.
Okay, so when we talk about surrogates court, we're talking about orphans, we're talking about widows, we're talking about people who are in need of a guardian, who have some degree of disability. Sometimes when you think about a minor that's coming through surrogates court, a lot of times the cases may connect from a wrongful death lawsuit from Supreme Court, where the family is moving forward on behalf of the person who passed away and looking to make sure that there is the letters either of testamentary or letter of administration that allows them to
access
criminal court on their behalf. So when you talk about people who passed away, you're talking really about the pandemic and the idea that oftentimes communities don't do a good job of planning for death. And the pandemic hit. And so if we didn't do a good job before the pandemic, writing wills, talking to our family members about where our important papers are, where do we bank? Are there life insurance policies? Sit down and really writing out a will so you can outline how you want your assets to be transferred. And that is in truly the best way to secure your family's legacy and assets, even utilizing trusts, because things like life insurance policies and trusts are ways that you can avoid going through surrogates court. And so the pandemic hit, and we didn't even really get a chance to say goodbye to our loved ones, much less.
And now their money is in a mess. And untouchable.
Untouchable. And you know, when people don't realize that, even if you pass away with a will, you still go through surrogates court to probate the will, to verify it, to make sure that no family members raising any objections. But at least you are.
That's perfunctionary in that case.
Exactly. Right. But if you pass away without a will, the surrogate court steps in as if they were your loved one. So they get the legal documents to go to the bank, to manage your family's cash and affairs, to transfer the deed, to pay off any debt. And from that process, whatever remains, right, that is what actually goes into the hands of the family.
Okay, so election actually has started. No, because you're on the state level, so you don't have ranked choice.
No ranked choice, but the election has started.
So the election has started. You can vote, which has started already, which started actually on Saturday. And as we like to say, it started on Sunday, 6/13, because that's always a good number for us. And go and vote. And June 22nd is the final date. After that, it's over. There's no ranked choice in the surrogates court. There's only ranked choice in the city council races, the mayor's race, controller's race, and the public advocate's race.
That's right. So everybody, it's a countywide election. So no matter where you live in Brooklyn, you'll find D'Esther Paul on the ballot, Dwayne Esther Paul for surrogate.
Good luck, and nice to see you again.
Thank you.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.